This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It's Sports Daily, another hour with you here on KFH, 97.5 FM, 1240 AM. You can call us at 869-1240. You can get in touch with us on our video streams. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected and Facebook and YouTube and X. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app as well. Tommy, something yesterday, we got some people fired up on the old video streams that, you know, I'm taking issue with this silly narrative, we'll call it, that this has been a tournament. Oh, NIL's killing Cinderellas and I just can't believe. Are you buying any of that? Have you felt that way?
No, I haven't. And honestly, I didn't even realize until I started looking at the Sweet 16 teams that really the only, I guess, Cinderella team is Arkansas as a 10 seed. I didn't even really realize that. I've had a good time with this tournament. I've actually really liked it. I've really liked the games and the teams that are in there. And I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, you don't have representation, you know, from like a mid-major or anything like that in the Sweet 16. But at least in my opinion, it has not changed my viewing experience at all.
I mean, and, you know, you got to go all the way back to like 2017 for the last time that we saw something like this. I don't get it. Like, we just come off of a couple of years ago where we had like a 5, a 6, an 8, and a 4 in the Final Four. Guess what? That was during the transfer portal era, the NIL era. Like, why are we massively overreacting to a season and a tournament that is going the way we all thought it was going to go? How many times have we talked this year about not being like some true juggernaut? It feels like there's about 15, 20 teams that could legitimately win a national title. Like, this Sweet 16 is so representative of this season. And then you have to bring in history. And this is what really aggravates me. Like, to sit there And I'm not talking about just like water cooler stuff. The problem has been we haven't had all the buzzer beaters. So you haven't had like the double digit true Cinderellas getting those wins. But the reality of this tournament is those teams don't ever do anything anyway. You've had three teams ever in the history of this tournament, almost 40 years, three teams that have been a six, a seven, and an eight seed. Every other year to win a national championship, they've been four seeds or better. Every single year. Cinderellas do not win this tournament. Cinderellas rarely even reach the final four. True Cinderellas. Kansas was a six seed in 88. UConn was a seven seed in Kemba Walker's year. And in the very first year of the tournament, Villanova was an eight seed in 1985 when they won it. Every other year, you have had basically a top 15 team going into the tournament win the national championship. This is exactly what always happens in this tournament. Always.
Yeah, I think people really like the novelty of a Cinderella upsetting one of the favorites like early on. But then when like push comes to shove and you're in the Elite Eight or you're in the Final Four, like you want to see the best teams in the country, you know, at least I do, want to see them battle it out to win a national championship. Like, I don't know. Is this better than just like a year ago and watching UConn run through everybody? Because I think this is way better than watching a
UConn. I thought you were going to go 2 years ago.
No, yes, like watching UConn just like they go into every game and you know they're just going to win. You know they're going to beat everybody. Yeah. So it's almost like the other games don't really matter. Like, why do we have these other teams in here? Why are we doing this? Why are we playing these other games? Because UConn was just like so freaking good. I would take this any day of the week. What we've had this year so far and the teams that are still standing in the Sweet 16. Because it really is almost anybody's game with the 16 teams that are left. And, you know, like the teams that everybody has been salivating over all year long are still in play. You've got your Duke and your Florida, your Houston, yeah, Auburn. Like you've got the all four number one seeds are still there. Three of the four number two seeds are still there. These are the best teams in America. And I think it's so much better than at least what we had a season ago.
I do too. And I'm not going to say it's better than what we had two seasons ago when you had like sevens, eights, and nines. I guess, like, for me, unless you're going to consider Gonzaga a Cinderella or Butler when they made the tournament like six straight years and back-to-back national championships. By the way, the first of those two, they made it in. They were a five seed. If that's a Cinderella for you, then yes, we're missing that. But that's not a Cinderella for me. A Cinderella for me is a team that had to win a conference tournament to get into the tournament. I mean, that's as simply as I can define it. Like a team that's not in if they don't win a conference tournament. And even then, like you got to go back. Like there have been years like Syracuse got in and made a run. Like, yeah, they were an 11, but are we like as if maybe you can call that a Cinderella? I think you could make a case for it.
It's kind of like calling Arkansas and John Calipari a Cinderella,
right,
as a 10
seed. Is that a Cinderella this year? No, I mean, I don't think it is, but I think we could think of that team that way. I'd be okay with that. They're not going to win a title, I don't think, but they could. I mean, they're the best shot. If you're looking at it that way, that's as good a shot as we've ever had because now they're all of a sudden they're healthy, right? And they have that coach. But no, what is the Cinderella? We talked about that a little bit, but this tournament is going the way they all go, right? When you get down to this point of the tournament, those teams almost never make it this far, and they never make it. We've never had a double-digit team make a national championship game. Never. 40 years of data now. So let's stop. That's not even the part that bothers me. What bothers me is real college basketball people, college sports people in the you know, out there where their opinions matter, trying to say that NIL and the transfer portal are ruining our tournament because we don't have them. Like, what does that even mean? I would say, when was the last time you felt like, and to start a Sweet 16, that you felt like it's as wide open as it is this year? Maybe you've got Duke as a heavy favorite. I think they're certainly a, I think they're the favorite, but I don't think they're a heavy favorite. And I've still got Houston winning it all. But it's as wide open to me as it's ever been going into the Sweet 16. So yeah, maybe there were one or two fewer buzzer beaters in the opening two rounds. But man, I'd put a lot of money that says these games in the Sweet 16 are fantastic.
There were fantastic round of 32 games on Saturday and Sunday. They were really, really good ones. That Maryland game, the Maryland-Colorado State game, the buzzer beater from Derek Queen, he might have traveled, but it was great. I mean, it was great. You know, and like I was really like leaning heavily on Colorado State.
How good was Houston Gonzaga?
That was a great basketball game. It was a high level basketball game. You know, the Texas Tech Drake game was phenomenal too. Like there were really, really good round of 32 games. And, you know, I would say that the people that are leaning on this narrative of NIL and the transfer portal killing college basketball, it's a lazy narrative. They didn't watch the games. They didn't. They might have watched a couple of the games in the round of 64, but they didn't watch any of the games on Saturday or Sunday. I would venture to guess they're not going to watch the games Thursday and Friday and this weekend. Like, these are high-level basketball games with the top programs in America. It's a lazy narrative. There wasn't a single time when I was watching basketball, whether it was inside Intrust Bank Arena or at home over the weekend, that I thought, man, just the caliber of play is not good now that NIL is here.
Really
I can't even watch this game. This isn't fun. Like, that's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Now, that you can, and I'll say this too, as the transfer portal opened and like 800 players entered it yesterday, nobody's going to sit here and say you shouldn't be annoyed at the transfer portal. We're all annoyed at the transfer portal, right? Is it, whether it's the right or the wrong thing morally is different than whether it annoys us. It annoys all of us. Like, literally everybody that watches is annoyed by the transfer portal. I can promise you that. That doesn't mean, though, it's ruining anything. It's, And it hasn't even really changed it. We've had like go look at the last four tournaments. They've all been wildly different from each other. This one happens to be, I think, representative that we have a collection of really good teams. And it has felt like it's been that way all year up through about the top 20. And I think that's exactly what we've seen now play its way through. Are you going to have 3 and 4 year players playing it like they're mid-major forever? I don't know. When FAU went the next year, Tommy, they brought all three of their best players back. Those guys didn't leave until Dusty May left, right? So I think we try to oversimplify things and draw conclusions off of a very small sample size. And if you blow it up, like that just, it's not backed up by history at all, at all. And this is going to be a great Sweet 16. I am as excited about this collection of teams as any other I've ever been, because I legitimately feel like any of these teams could win a national championship, or at least could win the next game that they play. And that is wild. That does not happen every year in this tournament. And that's really cool that it is that way.
I mean, what was it, a year ago when NC State made that run, or 2 years ago when NC State made that run? Last year. And which, by the way, their coach, you know, obviously was let go after this year. So like things change pretty quickly in college basketball. But like, you've got years where there's the 8 seed and the 5 seed and they're playing in the Sweet 16. And I'm like, is that really must see TV? Like, it's cool that they won. It's cool that they made it that far. But like, I'd rather see like that Houston Gonzaga game that we watched over the weekend,
but
right?
Sometimes you don't have to define. Remember Sister Jean and how she captivated? That's great stuff too. Like, it all, but it's all great. Like, just let this tournament be this tournament. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to draw conclusions about the end of the world about from one tournament. Last year's tournament was totally different. 2 years ago, the tournament was insane. Those were all existing at NIL and the transfer portal, by the way. So just let them be. We're going to come back. We'll talk Chiefs. We might touch on this further into the hour. But Chiefs talk next. Don't go away. More Sports Daily.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. We are glad to be joined by our Chiefs insider, Felix Johnson. Felix, how's your bracket?
Oh, it's going all right. I mean, I hate to say it, but I am kind of a subscriber to, if you're elite, I kind of believe in you a little bit more. So, I mean, Duke, go ahead, win the national title. I mean, I like it when blue bloods win championships, and KU definitely won one of them this year. So, or one of those contenders this year. So, so I like Duke this year, and I've always been a John Shire fan, taking over after Coach K. So, here we go.
Okay. All right. That's not, I mean, they're the favorite right now. It's not, it's, but it should be good. It should be good. All right. Let's talk Chiefs. This feels like the first, Well, no, it's not the, I was going to say it's the first time we haven't had a massive news break in the time we haven't talked to you over the week, but that's not true either because Charles Minnehue's back.
Yeah.
That feels large. We've been what, like, where's all this money coming from?
Well, and that's a question that I think I've asked more for the Philadelphia Eagles over the last couple of years because they have two of the top receivers in the league. They have a top flight quarterback contract, at least. All those defenders have a bunch of different contracts that they're going to be getting paid to with the young Georgia players that they've drafted over the last couple of years. Where's the money coming from? I mean, the NFL keeps upping the cap space every single year, $30 million more coming in this year. And then Charles Minnehue, him specifically, we talked about him towards the end of the year, him coming back from the injury in the playoffs, how big of a factor he was going to be. Maybe not the sack numbers. He's not going to be your double digit, sack guy like George Karlaftis was this past year. But he is a high pressure percentage guy, which in today's NFL is almost as important as your legitimate sack numbers. And so, I mean, again, the Chiefs are still in that win now mode, especially not completing the three-peat that has something, some type of hunger within them. And I think that works from the front office all the way down to the players like Charles Minnehue, who hasn't had that moment in a Super Bowl like most Chiefs have over the last couple of years.
Well, it's not just Charles and Minnehue, but also, of course, we know Jerry Tillery signs a one-year deal with the Chiefs for their defensive line. And then in the last 24 hours, the Chiefs bring back Mike Pinnell. That move, the Pinnell move, was not overly surprising to me because they've got so much experience with him on that roster. And, you know, he hadn't found a home up to this point. But definitely reinforcements on the defensive line, that's been a priority over the last week or so.
Absolutely. And I think that's always been kind of not necessarily a hole, but just somewhere where the Chiefs have been lacking a little bit. Obviously, Chris Jones is going to beg a lot of double teams. And even then, he's not as, how do I say this, energetic on every single play that he could be, especially in run defense. And so a second defensive tackle like a Mike Pinnell stepping in and being kind of that run stopper, that guy that can get off a block and make a tackle in the backfield like we saw in last year's Super Bowl against the 49ers. And so I think if Jerry Tillery can come in and be another guy in that rotation in the middle of that defense where Derek Nnadi has been in, has been in the past, having guys in the middle of the defense that are not necessarily giving you something that Chris Jones can't, but giving you something that Chris Jones can't.
Well, okay. So two of those guys, Tillery you mentioned, and Minnehue, what is the need at the draft now? Like what, like they, we thought, okay, defensive line depth, but that was before I thought Minnehue was coming back. So now if Minnehue's back, I mean, that's kind of the return of the defensive line. Like, are we in true best player available? Is there a clear need on this team? Maybe it's left tackle again. Like, and all that being said, like, if there was ever a year that the Chiefs loved a player and wanted to trade up and go get him, especially at left tackle, this would be the year to do it. They don't have it. They don't go into this draft with clear needs. They have depth needs. I get it. McDuffie may leave. I get all that. Mm-hmm. But man, if you finally wanted to make a long-term solution somewhere, I feel like this is the year you could do it.
I think left tackle would be an interesting spot to see if they were going to do that had they not made the Moore signing earlier this offseason. Now, we've talked about it a handful of times. Outside of Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith kind of a fluke being in the sixth round, not even a fluke. He was a first-round talent and fell down to the sixth round because of his heart condition coming out in his draft year. But they haven't really drafted tackles well. They haven't done anything with tackles well. Exactly. I mean, the Kingsley Sulamaitaia, 1 year, we'll see. Hopefully that progresses forward at one spot or another, right tackle, guard, one of the guard spots. You look at Darian Kennard, Wanya Morris. There's like three or four guys that they've drafted over the last probably 4 years that just haven't cracked into the lineup. They've still had to go sign Jawan Taylor, trade for Orlando Brown Jr. They've had to still draft guys year after year at the same position to try and solve that same question over the last couple years. And so I'm not exactly sure if the Chiefs feel confident in saying we can find our left tackle answer in the draft, unless they were to trade up. But even then, there's not that many tackles that they can wait for, like Josh Connerly at 31. And so it might be a best player available. We've talked about it a handful of times where I think they can go get an offensive weapon to really point away from Travis Kelce as a focus point of this offense. And so there's a lot of different options that the Chiefs have in the early rounds of the draft. But I think it's hard pressed for me to say, yeah, go ahead and spend it on another tackle after we've seen you guys it not work out four or five times in the last 4 years.
You know, usually having a conversation about a backup offensive lineman is, you know, not the most important thing in the world, but in the last 24 hours, the Chiefs have re-signed Mike Caliendo to come back on a one-year deal, $3 million or so for the season. And, you know, he started at left guard when Joe Tooney was moved over to left tackle for a portion of last season. I know with the Jalen Moore signing, and then, you know, I think they still feel really good about Kingsley Suamataia at left guard. But in your mind, how important is it to have a depth piece like a Mike Caliendo back on the roster?
Oh, it's huge. You're talking to a former offensive lineman, so I think having as many quality players at that position is only beneficial. You see it in the NFL nowadays, and especially with how the surging back that the run game has had in Philadelphia and Detroit, like Buffalo. I think they use the sixth offensive lineman the most out of anybody in the league. Dan Skipper has become a legitimate celebrity, and he's a backup tackle for the Lions. And so I think that having another player that can step in like the Chiefs needed in Caliendo this year is huge. It's almost as important, and perhaps more important, because they actually get on the field sometimes than a backup quarterback, because you have some more versatility. If you can throw in a Dan Skipper to on the edge of your line and run the ball that way and be incredibly effective, or you have an injury or something like the Chiefs had and Joe Tooney having to switch over and Caliendo stepping in. So I think that a sixth offensive lineman is growing in value, maybe not more than a backup quarterback strictly off the position, but it's growing in value over the last couple of years because of what we're seeing in these last few teams that have been really, really successful.
All right, put your general manager hat on here, Felix.
It's always on.
I'm gonna give you a choice: long term deal for George Karlaftis, long term deal for Trent McDuffie. You can only have one.
Trent McDuffie. It's pretty simple. I wouldn't say that getting double digit sacks is easy, but having a sack every other game would get you about there, and that's where George Karlaftis was this year, and that's nowhere near being an elite pass rusher, which is the money that he might be begging when the time comes. We already know, and we've talked about this, we already know that Trent McDuffie is elite. He's one of the top, at the very least, four corners in the NFL. You got to pay a guy like that, especially if you drafted him in the first round. It only makes sense to sign a guy like that. In the same case of George Karlaftis at a premium position like defensive end, but he may not beg the same amount of cash. That there's a bunch of defensive ends that you can find. Like you went out and found Charles Omenihu. I'm not saying you can do the same thing again and have just as effective of a player, but you can have you can find your way if you were to let George Karlaftis walk. Letting Trent McDuffie walk, there's only like two or three other guys like him in the NFL.
Let me ask you this. When you look at the draft and you look at the potential players and positions and that sort of thing of need for Kansas City when it comes to them, is there a scenario where this team can get better this season? Or is it going to be, in your mind, more of a long-term play, more of a developmental type thing? Or is there a player or a few players out there that can immediately impact the Chiefs next season?
That's what's kind of interesting with the Chiefs, is that, yes, it's both. Because with Xavier Worthy, it was, all right, he's the fastest player we've ever seen. He can help the Chiefs obviously out right now, but it turned into, he became the Chiefs' number one receiver by the end of the year because of injuries and obviously development. But that's what we look at when we're looking at Chiefs' weapons, at least offensively, is it's a hard playbook to learn. Can you develop throughout the season like we saw Rashee Rice do, like we've seen Xavier Worthy do, like we've seen a handful of different players do, even just new veterans coming to the team? And so I think it is a long-term situation where by year two, you're actually the player that you could have been year one any other place. But at the same time, you're probably playing in the Super Bowl and maybe even winning it because you're a Kansas City Chief and Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback. So I think that in this particular draft, the only way that they can have players affect them for 2025 would be drafting heavily offensively, because we've talked about it. Who's going to fit on this defense? They've signed a handful of defensive linemen. They've brought back Nick Bolton. The secondary is still full of the young guys that they drafted in 2022. Offensively, you have receivers that you need. You probably need to grab another running back. There's some offensive line issues. So everything's pointing to you drafting offense. Defense is cool. You need to help your quarterback now.
Yeah, Tommy and I disagreed on offense. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, joining us. We disagree on where the offense is going in, like, you know, regardless of who they draft. Like, if we just look at it right now, I am of the camp that I think the offense is better than it was a year ago for the majority of the season because it's healthy. Tommy thinks it's going to be more kind of the same. Where do you fall with where things sit offensively right now as compared to last year when it was a pedestrian offense?
I would say ask me again after this draft, because the only thing that was going to truly change with this team, and the only thing that has changed with this team from when it was an elite offense in 2022 when they beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl, was that last year, was Eric Bieniemy being a part of this team. And now he's not. Matt Nagy's still there. I mean, I don't know. He obviously doesn't call plays like Bieniemy did it. He got a head coaching job off of not calling plays and then calling plays. And so what does Matt Nagy do? I don't know, but the offense is clearly worse, and there's only really one piece that's different. We're well beyond the point of them probably letting Matt Nagy walk, and he's probably never going to lose his job unless he gets another head coaching job, or it'll be a situation where his contract runs out or something like that. So I think that, I mean, honestly, he might be the next head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs here in the next couple of years. But I think that that's the biggest point of change that we've seen for the Chiefs. Where can they go other than that? All right, now you got to get a bunch of different offensive pieces, whether it be your running backs or Luther Burden in the first round or whatever the case may be. I think that that's the only change that they can make is personnel-wise, is improving that. Other than that, you can't really fire Matt Nagy in March.
Yeah, I mean, and that is actually, that's a big part of my point going into this season, is that it's less about personnel. I don't think that they're going to be able to do anything of major significance personnel-wise offensively that will impact them right away. It's got to be more from a playbook perspective, right? It's got to be more a situational type thing with the schemes and the way that they're drawing up the offense, because, you know, you've got the best quarterback in the league. You've got a ton of weapons around him. They should not be a league average offense. And they were a season ago. And I know they were dealing with injuries and all of that, but every team in the NFL deals with injuries. I think that you've got to almost look more at, okay, how do we deploy these weapons in a better way this upcoming season, as opposed to we need to continue to try to add more weapons?
Well, I think, and some of it is Andy Reid's perhaps the greatest coach of all time and one of the greatest offensive coaches of all time, for sure. He's a little stubborn. I mean, there's just certain things that the Chiefs just will or will not do because, guess what? Andy Reid doesn't want to do them. Whatever the case may be, whether it's running the football until the fourth quarter and, like, the last third of the season, they refused to run the football, and that was partially because Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, and who do you want to give the ball 20 times or 25 times a game? Neither one, really. But at the same time, it's just the Chiefs are incredibly stubborn for whatever reason. Because it's worked. They've won Super Bowls and been incredibly successful. But at this point, where you saw it in this year's Super Bowl, finally, bombs over the top started working, and it was way too late for it to figure it out, and it was the fourth quarter of the last game of the year. And so I think kind of leaning into what worked for them late in the Super Bowl next year will probably help them in the long run, post-Travis Kelce, post-Andy Reid, post in the next couple years, because this is a this is a thing that can go on longer than just these last couple of years and the next two. And so I think that's somewhere where the Chiefs aren't looking right now. And that's fine because they've played in the last three Super Bowls and they could play in the next one and win it. So it's the Chiefs being stubborn, but for a good reason. And that's just,
yeah. And maybe we're all saying the same thing with different ways to get there, because if play calling's going to change, having Rashee Rice and a healthy Hollywood Brown and a healthy mm-hmm. Isaiah Pacheco and a developed Xavier Worthy is going to allow them to do some different things than they could for the largest chunk of last year when they didn't have any of those guys. And they brought in DeAndre Hopkins in a snap and tried to get him acclimated, and all of these things that they had to pivot to last year. It certainly limited their play calling, but yes. I think they get to walk into this year if those guys are healthy and this off. It almost has to be better because they've got all their guys
strictly off of being a complete lineup change. I mean, effectively, Hollywood Brown had one snap before he got hurt as a Kansas City Chief before he played towards the end of the year. And so I think that you're right in the effect of, like, they're just going to have guys that have been around the team for a little bit longer. They're going to have them week one, presumably with Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and then whatever happens with Rashee Rice's situation. So, like, I agree on that notion. To me, it's just that I believe that going into this past year too. What happened? The offense was kind of boring until after Rashee Rice got hurt, particularly, but that's partially because of the injuries. And so, I mean, to me, the only change that can happen would be at the offensive coordinator position, because that was the only change that has happened since they were an elite offense. I mean, the only real change that has happened since they were an elite offense.
They ain't going to change that right now, but I'm with you.
I'll keep screaming into the abyss.
You said Matt Nagy is going to be the next head coach of the Chiefs, and
I don't like it. Here's the thing, Matt Nagy, I don't think he ever gets the credit as a head coach that he properly deserved. I mean, he took the Bears to the playoffs twice with Mitchell Trubisky. That's worth something. And so, I mean, maybe he's a better head coach than we remember, but obviously he's not doing something right.
Maybe, but it could get anybody excited. We'll see.
I'm not willing I'm not willing to go down that path of Matt Nagy as my head coach. Right now.
I'm not. I wouldn't be happy about it. I'm just saying.
Andy Reid's gonna coach forever. As long as there are cheeseburgers and plays to draw, Andy Reid will coach forever.
I think he's running out of plays to draw, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, no, he'll pull something out of what he saw in the Division III championship game, and they'll work it in and implement it, you know, in training camp. That's how they roll. All right, Felix, find Felix's work on at Arrowhead Addict. You can follow him on social, Felix R. Johnson on social, Field Vision, Arrowhead Addict, all the places. Check it out. We appreciate it. Always something good to talk about with the Chiefs.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
There goes Felix Johnson. We'll do more draft stuff and get specific into players and lean into Felix for that. I don't have the time or the energy to study much outside of, like, the first round, maybe the first two rounds, Tommy, or players we just happen to see anymore. Those days have passed me. Not a mock drafter. I was when I was, you know, in college, I was into it. Didn't have anything else to do. Thanks for Felix Johnson stopping by. If you missed any of that on the Chiefs talk there or the Chiefs Insider, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app for it. We'd invite you to do that. Good stuff. I don't know what they're going to do. Wide open on what they could do in the draft. I still think pass rusher is the most likely, but they can do anything, which is always a position of strength in a draft, right? There could, man. You guys talked about the offense. All these running backs, I hope they can get a back with some juice in there to mix in. Maybe Elijah Mitchell can be that. I know Kareem Hunt's the safety net to Pacheco, but that explosive back would be a nice addition to the offense. But they can do anything they want. I mean, they're in a position of strength now.
Yeah, I'm leaning more and more to pass rush. I mean, that's kind of where I live right now, I think they need to go in the first round. You know, just because
aren't we cooking in that we just don't think Karloftis is coming back?
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, we obviously don't know. You need a contingency plan on if he's not back. And, you know, then also, we talked about it before, the Felix and Udike Uzomah draft, you know, that didn't that didn't play out particularly well. Like, he's still on the team, but he hasn't taken that step forward that I think that everybody, you know, wanted him to. So you need to have more depth there. You need to have a playmaker there. And I think that this would be an opportunity to go and get somebody like that.
No question about it. I have not seen, as we check in, and we'll have to do this, and I'm not looking forward to it. My least favorite thing about the transfer portal is trying to keep up with the transfer portal. I haven't seen anything of significance. We'll have Shreyas Lotta in later this week, which will be very nice to let him sort of catch us up. I know he put out yesterday sort of a very likely return, and on that list was Flory Badunga. On that list was Jamari McDowell and Marco Jackson, who we sort of forgot about this year, honestly. So that's something of significance. Bill Self talked about it, and, you know, he's always candid, and we'll see. We'll try to keep up. We'll do the best that we can with the portal, but it is an impossible task to know who's in, who's out. Like, it's just insane. So that's also out there. And then, of course, we've got K-State women with significant news that we mentioned off the top of the show. Juju Watkins tore ACL last night for USC. The door is wide open for the K-State women now in their attempt to reach a Final Four. You know, they've kind of had the opposite. They've been banged up. Now they're finally healthy, I think. And then something like that, the best player in college basketball leaves with an injury. Okay, like, here we go. And I say the best player. There's lots of great players. One of the best players in college basketball on the women's side. So K-State's women have an opportunity. That line still isn't out, by the way. I've been checking. For those that might be interested in that. Let's talk more about the men's tournament, Tommy. We got into this off the top. I'm glad you're with me. I'm glad you're with me because you'd have thought I'd said that, you know, the sky is green yesterday when I said that I think this Cinderella thing is way overblown and that NIL's ruined. Like, this tournament has been such a perfect way to look back on this season. We have never known who that, like, once it became clear that it was again not going to work for Kansas, and that was your preseason number one. I think Duke is certainly the closest thing to a team who can make a dominant run through the next, what would it be, four games? But I think that's unlikely. I still like Houston. I think Florida looked a little flawed. Was that their bad game? And if it was, they've got a great chance. But it's not just like those ones. I don't like Auburn. Tommy, you can make a case. You can make a case for everybody right now in that tournament. Every team, you could see a path. There are some that are less likely, but they're not impossible. Like, this is really good stuff. And it's perfect for what we've seen all season long. Are you going to tell me that Alabama, that Texas Tech, that Maryland, that Arizona don't have a chance?
Michigan Ole Miss, State,
Chris Beard, Kentucky, Michigan.
Tom Izzo, like, what are we doing here?
Here's what I'll tell you. I don't think Purdue has a chance. I think BYU has a chance to win some games, but I'll say it's unlikely that they win as many as it will take down the stretch. I think Arizona's got a tall order, and that's probably it. I think Michigan can absolutely beat Auburn. So I don't know. I mean, maybe those are the least likely. Purdue and BYU are probably the least likely for me, but BYU is unique in what it does that we've talked about a billion times. Like, they can outshoot anybody, and it's not like they need to play their best game to outshoot anybody. It's kind of what they do, but they're so Jekyll and Hyde. Seeing them do it at this level now, four games in a row, is probably less likely. And Purdue, I'm just not giving enough credit, but I'm not going to give them enough credit.
There's not a single team out of the 16 that I don't think could find a way to win a national championship. Of course, you're obviously going to have teams that are more likely than others, but right. There's not a single team that you look at. Like, and I know, you know, we were going back and talking about all of these different Cinderella teams and all of that. You know, you bring up Sister Mary and Loyola Chicago and, like, you know, all, like,
Sister Jean.
Whatever. What did I say?
Sister Mary.
Sister Jean. Sister. Whatever. Loyola
Twisted Sister.
Loyola Chicago was not going to win a national championship, right? Like, they weren't going to do it. They weren't going to win it. But, like, there's not a single team on this list in this 16 that could not find a path to win a national championship.
And I agree.
So that's why, like, yeah, like, I'm having a lot of fun watching this tournament. And I think the Sweet 16 round is going to be phenomenal. I think the Elite 8 round is going to be phenomenal. There's not a dud in my opinion, as far as matchups are concerned from here on out.
Oh, I don't think so either. And here's the thing. While I think it's less likely that BYU or Purdue could make it all the way through, I absolutely think both of them could win their next game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I think they can do it enough times in a row, but they would, if you put them up against any other team in the tournament, they can absolutely win that game. And that's what, you know, that is where this becomes really challenging. Like, I'm happy with my bracket now, having the 4-1s in, even though I've never really liked Auburn. They're 8.5-point favorites against Michigan. Like, I never really liked Auburn, but their path was really solid to me. Houston, who I love, has, now that they got through Gonzaga there, an interesting matchup here, but they play Tennessee. Houston and Tennessee? Come on now. Like, you want to talk about defense on display. Duke gets to potentially play Alabama. Well, no matter who Duke plays in their next two games, it's going to be shootout city. It's going to be shootout city with BYU in the first time, and then whether it's, you know, whether it's, with Arizona, and then whether it's BYU or Alabama, shootout city, no matter what.
How about the fact that, by the way,
Duke-Arizona line's only at 153?
Oh, I'm hammering the over on that for sure.
I think so, yeah. Right?
How cool is it, by the way, that you had three major, I mean, there were more than just these three, but three major coaching changes during the offseason. You have John Calipari go to Arkansas. You have Mark Pope go to Kentucky. You have Kevin Young go to BYU, all in a line, and all three of those teams made the Sweet 16 this year.
And how about this? Speaking of BYU, Wyatt Thompson told us yesterday that he thinks BYU may be the favorite going into next year. Like, if we were talking about the Big 12 and what it might look like, that's how high he is on what they've got cooking. Here's my favorite line of maybe college basketball this year. And I want to know what you're going to do with it. BYU Alabama right now, over 175. 175. that means 88 to 85 doesn't cover it.
Yeah.
Right? 175.
As much as I love BYU, as much as I think that there's going to be a lot of scoring, I don't think you can take the over in that, right? Like, I think you have to take the under.
So it's so I'm trying to do the math here. So it's a 5.5-point spread. With that, you're looking at an implied total here of essentially like 91 to 85. That's what kind of game Vegas sees that being. No, you can't take the over.
I don't think, yeah, you can't take the over.
A college basketball game betting on an over like that. There's no, you just can't do that. But man, you want to talk about a fun matchup? And there are these kinds of like fun matchups. How about the opposite end of that? You know what the over under on the Houston Purdue game is right now?
150.
132.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So you're looking at it. You're looking at an implied total there of 70 to 63-ish, 71 to 63, basically. That's the kind of, like, that's why I love this Sweet 16, though. Like, I love this Sweet 16. You've got some teams that do different stuff, but they're all good. And how does that battle itself out? I can tell you the early lines I do like. I like Tech -5.5. I love Florida -6.5. Those are my two favorites right now. And I kind of like, I like Michigan +8.5 maybe. But here we go. Like, give me Thursday. What time do the games start Thursday? I mean, when do we first get the action? 6 o'clock, yeah. Right? Yeah, 6:30, 8:39, those four games.
How are you going to balance?
Inject it into my veins.
How are you going to balance a Sweet 16 and opening day of Major League Baseball? Like, it's the same day.
Well, because opening day of Major League Baseball for most teams is at 3 o'clock. So, or earlier in the day. So, like, the Rangers and the Royals, like, get them at 3 o'clock. I know that's what time the Royals play. I think that's what time the Rangers play. And then you just go right into college basketball. You and I Thursday, shout out to Crestview Country Club for being great supporters of the program. Don't we have like wine or something?
I think
on
you
Thursday?
Do. I think you guys are doing a wine tasting.
Oh, you're not going
to
be.
I got to watch college basketball. Like, you're going to go to a wine tasting. Too. I'm going to watch college basketball.
I didn't think about that. But the good news about Crestview, though, is they'll have it on. So I'll watch it, or I'll just be totally absent from the conversations my wife is trying to make me have watching college basketball coming from Major League Baseball. Shout out to Crestview. We appreciate their support. Cool events like wine tastings, beer tastings, all of that stuff. Give them a call. Go check out the facilities. They just sent an email, by the way. They're like, they're taking all the members' input on how they do like their entire calendar of events, which is going to get totally retooled this year, which is just one of the things I never saw coming when you and I went over there. So give them a call. Check them out. Check out the great memberships at Crestview. Yeah, opening day, like Thursday. Where's Thursday going to stack up on the sports calendar days, which I already think should be a national holiday for the opening of Major League Baseball? I mean, are you kidding me right now? Right into the Sweet 16?
It's so good. Like, I love opening day of Major League Baseball rolling right into the Sweet 16. You can't beat that.
The Rangers, the Royals playing at 3 o'clock. Can I play hooky? I might play hooky.
You got to go to a wine tasting.
Yeah. I might play hooky from that. No, I won't because they got TVs on, so I'll be good. It won't interfere with baseball. It won't interfere with baseball. Baseball, 3 o'clock opening day. It's a little later than normal. You'll hear opening day of the Royals here on KFH. I mean, we're there. Like, we are there for Major League Baseball. We're into the Sweet 16. Does it stack up for the opening of the NFL season? Those are my two favorites. And then you've got the first weekend of college basketball. You put the Masters in there.
Oh,
man, it's going to be hard to beat opening day. Into
love this time of year. It's my favorite. It's my favorite for sure.
All right, that'll do it for us on a Tuesday of Sports Daily. Tommy, glad to have you back and in the chair and, you know, whole again.
Yeah, good to be back. Looking forward to the rest of the week.
It's going to be a great week. So tonight you've got Shocker Baseball. Nice little midweek at Oklahoma State. Wichita State needs to get things back in line here as conference play is underway on the weekend. So that'll be at 5:45, the pregame coverage, regular programming up until then. And we will just continue to get you ready for opening day for the Sweet 16, the women's tournament now, wide open for K-State. We got a lot to come for you with that. Trius Lotta joins us tomorrow. We'll get the latest on the transfer portal. It's all coming for you on a Wednesday edition of Sports Daily. Thanks to Felix Johnson. Thanks, Max. Thanks, Tommy. I'm Jacob. See you then.